love them. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. We got 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. We'll get you set for tomorrow night's Jets-Panthers game in Miami. We're going to be joined by Bill Lindsay, Florida Panthers radio analyst. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Adam Kimmelman from NHL.com joins us to talk about the World Junior Hockey Championships. The training camp rosters were announced earlier today. We'll talk to Adam about that. As long as my voice doesn't go out on me, I've got a little bit of a scratchy throat, so you'll have to bear with me for the next couple hours.
We have to get you some water, Drew.
Well, I got some coffee here. I'm trying to keep it nice and moist and lubricated, but we'll see how I succeed with that over the next couple hours. And then at 7:30, Mark Dumont from The Athletic is going to join us, talk about the red-hot Montreal Canadiens, joined in studio by Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this Wednesday evening. Welcome to the program.
What's going on, boys? Yeah, a tough loss last night for the Winnipeg Jets. I think after that resounding 5-0 win over the Ottawa Senators on Sunday night, everybody was just expecting the Jets to go into new Little Caesars Arena and just steamroll the Detroit Red Wings. But as you know, they had other plans.
They did. That did not was not how it ended up. How you doing this evening, Shawnee, there, bud?
Doing very well. It's fair to say the Red Wings were hot and ready for that game.
Yep. Terrible. Just hang your head in shame and please please leave the studio and never speak again on air.
Because Little Caesars has
hot. Yeah, no, I got the joke. I mean, I think we all got the joke. We're just saying, that. Hang on. How long did you work on that one for? Was that an all-day thing? Did it come to you just now?
It came to me in the first period of last night. And
really?
I could not wait to get
it. So you've been waiting. You've been, solid, just under 24 hours you've been waiting to use that one.
I said
one.
It to my parents. They didn't think it was funny.
Yeah.
Shawnee, I could really go from some of those Little Caesars breadsticks right now.
Yeah, those are good.
Really? You're just going to keep going? Like, we just sort of killed the joke and you just tried to go back to it?
Yeah, that's what I did.
Okay.
Looks like Drew's hot and ready.
Okay. Well, I am hot and ready. Let's get going into that Jets-Red Wings game.
Hot and bothered.
Yeah, hot and bothered, that too. The Jets should be hot and bothered after that performance last night. A 5-1 defeat at the Little Caesars Arena. I was going to call it the Joe Louis Arena, but we know that's not the name anymore. A 5-1 loss, the Red Wings really took control of the game in the first period. They weathered the Jets' comeback, and then that controversial third goal is, I think, clearly the TSN turning point in last night's game, where, it was a 2-1 game at that point in time, early in the third period. Teams are back and forth. Jets have had a number of good opportunities to tie the game. Jimmy Howard really stood on his head, playing some great hockey in net for the Red Wings, and that's been a sore spot for their team all season long. But Jimmy Howard had been great, really, through 40 minutes last night. And then that third goal occurs. It's called a goal on the ice. They review it for the high stick. No high stick. Then the Jets challenge on goaltender interference. And I got to tell you, gents, I was surprised that goal stood. And I think I'm with, like a lot of people throughout the NHL right now, I just don't know what constitutes goaltender interference anymore.
Yeah, Drew, well, first, if you want to start off with, the goal that many thought should have been disallowed, that 3-1 goal in the third period, I agree with you. Watching that game last night, I thought that that goal would be overturned and the Wings would still be up 2-1, but as we know, when a defenseman follows a forward into that crease and gives him a little shove, and that's what Josh Morrissey did with Gustav Nyquist into Connor Hellebuck, I'm not saying that it was the right call, but the way the rule is interpreted, it was the right call. Now, I didn't think that goal should have counted, and you mentioned that that goal was the turning point. There's no denying that that was one of the turning points. I always like to go back to what happens in-game, though, and make the point that there are multiple turning points, and I think that Darren Helm breakaway goal that made it 4-1 really put the game out of reach. So I would say, though, that that disallowed goal, Drew, especially on the road there when you didn't have a first period, and you know what? we knew that the Red Wings were going to be desperate. Henrik Zetterberg said it himself. It was one of the most embarrassing defeats that he's ever experienced. So we knew, guys, that the Jets weren't going to go into Detroit and just absolutely dominate the Red Wings. Even though they were playing really well at home, we knew that the Red Wings were going to put up a fight. We knew that the Wings were going to get off to a good start. But unfortunately, the Jets just didn't have a response early in that first period. If you think about it, guys, the Red Wings could have been up 3-0 or 4-0 with that 5-on-3 that they had. They had another 5-on-3 later in the game in the second period. So, you know, the Jets made it close in the second period there with Patty Laine getting his third power play goal in as many games. But the Red Wings were the better team last night, Sean.
Yeah, and one step further, I think a real momentum shifter in the game, regardless of the disallowed goal, which I'll get to in a second. But the Jets got a power play opportunity down 2-1 to start the third period and were really given an opportunity to grab momentum and kind of turn the tide of that game. I believe it was Darren Helm on a cross check to Brandon Tanev.
Yeah,
a real vicious just cross check. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't get anything set up, let alone, you know, cycle the puck and get some quality scoring chances. The Jets, it was that dysfunctional power play that we've kind of seen in the past kind of rear its ugly head. And for a tool that's been so important and useful and beneficial to the Jets as their power play has been lately, they really kind of squandered an opportunity to seize momentum, kind of turn the tide, I thought. And then, of course, Gustav Nyquist scores, and then the goals just keep coming. They scored 3 goals on, I believe, 7 shots in the third. So.
Yeah, I don't want anyone to misconstrue what I'm saying. I thought the Red Wings were the better of the two teams last night.
And credit Detroit. They were aggressive. They were hungry.
Yeah, they'd been embarrassed on Saturday night and, you know, against the Habs, losing 10-1. Oh, so yeah. Their response and the fact that they performed well, I think, isn't a surprise. You can be disappointed in the Jets' effort. Certainly that's fair comment as well. But I thought that even when it was 2-1, before that third goal, I thought it was anybody's game still, despite the fact that, you know, you sort of felt Detroit was the better of the two teams in the first period. The Jets were beginning to get their legs underneath them. They were coming. I mentioned they were peppering Jimmy Howard with many different, you know, good quality scoring chances. I mean, Dmitry Kulikov, I thought, had chance after chance after chance.
He
had a very good game. Certainly noticeable last night.
You can pour one out for Dmitry Kulikov on that shot block also, because that takes some.
Yeah, 5-on-3 on that 5-on-3 in the first period where he stands. I mean,
point blank.
Yeah, he took that one like a champ. That was a pretty vicious blow that he stood in front of that shot and blocked it the way he did. I just think that in that kind of game, I understand sort of the Jets are battling uphill the entirety of that game. They don't have their A game, and then to sort of get pushed back down the mountain after that third goal counts, I think, is really a. I think it's a sad state of affairs for the NHL in that nobody has any idea. Like, why wasn't that goaltender interference? Sure, Josh Morrissey followed the player through the crease, but he didn't force the player through the crease.
He's also not going to let an unimpeded player just make his way right to the net.
As a defender, what's Josh Morrissey supposed to do in that situation? Exactly, you're right, Sean. The player chooses to take a path through the blue paint, sort of behind Connor Hellebuck. What's Morrissey supposed to do? Just leave him because he's in the blue paint on the off chance he might run into your goaltender? It doesn't work that way. Defender has to follow the guy, and I think that should have given him that should have been the default as to why it was goaltender interference.
Yeah, but plays like this happen in hockey all the time. And last Friday, the Jets benefited from an offside call.
Right.
A goal was called back. So in this particular case, based on the rules, the goal didn't count. 9 out of 10 times that goal is not going to count. Now, I think the rule needs to be amended. I'm not saying that the international rules where a player goes into the crease and the whistle's blown, I don't think that's going to happen in the NHL. But, I mean, look at it. They didn't play well in the first period.
Definitely.
We can sit here and we can talk about it for 10 minutes, and I realize that on TSN 1290 today, on every show, it's been a topic of discussion. But the Jets didn't play well in the first period, and they didn't play well enough to win this game. So, I mean, you're not going to sit here and cry about it. You got to focus on the next game that's coming up here.
You're right. And absolutely, the Jets didn't play well. Let me ask you guys this. Sorry, Sean, quickly, you want to...
I just want to get back to just something I wanted to touch on earlier. The only thing that really concerns me with regards to defining goaltender interference is I go back to the L.A. game where Mark Scheifele was standing in front of Jonathan Quick, and Jonathan Quick just kind of wraps his paddle around Scheifele's leg. Scheifele kind of moves, drags him a little bit, but Quick initiates that contact.
Right.
And the goal is disallowed for goaltender interference. I just don't get how that quantifies goaltender interference, but the play last night doesn't. It just, there's so many inconsistencies.
It's like what's a catch in the NFL. Nobody knows anymore. It's in the eye of the official who just makes a determination after seeing the play in real-time speed and then watching a replay on a tablet that apparently that's supposed to provide clarity. It certainly doesn't in my books. Let me ask you guys this. It's sort of lost in and around the Jets' great performances at home is that this is a team that's lost three of their last five games and has not won on the road since that game in Anaheim on Black Friday. They lost their last three on the road. Do you see any signs of concern with how the Jets have been playing on the road in the last few games where they've been badly, I would say they've been certainly badly outplayed in San Jose. They were outplayed last night, and then whatever you want to say about that Denver game, the game in Denver, it was an ugly game all around. But do you have any concerns about the Jets' performance on the road over the last, you know, three, five games?
Well, what about the game in Nashville as well, going back a couple of weeks? I think you have to be concerned, don't you, if you're Paul Maurice and the Jets coaching staff? They haven't played the same way on the road that they have at home. And I'm not saying necessarily that, you know, the Jets should be concerned about their season as a whole here, but there's no doubt that, you know, the Jets are playing completely dominant at home right now, and they're not able to translate that on the road. So I think the game against Nashville, even though they lost 5-2, it was really one bad period there, if you remember, in the second period that really led to their undoing. But the game against San Jose, guys, was not the Jets' best period. Wasn't their best game, I should say. And certainly the game last night was not a complete game from the Jets. So I think there are reasons to be concerned right now. But if you win 80% of your games at home, I mean, you can play 500 hockey on the road. So, I mean, the Jets need to start with tomorrow night's game against the Florida Panthers. This is a team that's reeling right now. And then you have the big game Saturday night against the best team in the NHL right now. So you're going to have to figure this out on this road trip.
I don't think it's as much a concern as some people are making it out to be. I mean, a couple of those losses were one-goal losses, one of them in overtime. So, you know, you can kind of shift that either way. You look at their play. They did not play that great against Colorado. So a little bit of concern, but you get that point. And then yesterday's loss in Detroit. But prior to those road losses, the San Jose, they played some pretty good hockey in California up against the Ducks and the Kings. So you kind of take the good with the bad. You notice a little bit, the only concerning thing is the game that they're putting on the ice. You know, they kind of get away from that brand of hockey that they've just become so comfortable playing at Bell MTS Place. So that's the concerning part to me. But the losses, I mean, you look at some of the scores, and they could have gone either way. Not too concerned.
It sort of was a weird night in Detroit last night. I mean, how often are you going to get a guy, one player, get a, it's your favorite penalty, as he puck, two puck over the glass penalties while shorthanded on both different, on both instances. Tyler Myers, of course, taking those two penalties. Just sort of a bizarre, just, it made for a bizarre night. When you saw that happen, you sort of knew you were in for a bit of a bizarre evening in Detroit last night.
And Josh Morrissey in the box both times.
Yeah.
So next time Josh Morrissey has a penalty, Tyler Myers is not to go out on the ice.
He's not allowed to, kill the penalty in that instance. It was sort of a bizarre situation there, as with Myers taking those two penalties there.
Yeah, you don't see 3 5-on-3s very often in a game. But and the Jets had their opportunities on the power play, as Sean mentioned. They were only able to capitalize once on that 5-on-3. But certainly the Jets' penalty kill was very good last night. But yeah, that's something you don't see very often.
The Jets will look to get back on track tomorrow evening as they play in Miami against the Florida Panthers. We'll talk about that game. We'll preview the Jets and the Panthers. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Up. He was able to bounce off, but now Haley in there. Played back to the point by the Islanders. Held in. Great save by Luongo, and he's down. Roberto Luongo is down after making that save with the right leg, and Derek McKenzie, oh boy, he's calling over the training staff immediately.
You know, Randy, you gotta, I mean, from our perspective, all I heard was a hard shot on a goalie pad, but did you see anything else?
Well, the way he extended that right pad to make that save, whether it is a... the overextended, watch. That's all I can see is he just kicked that right leg out.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Stevie Goldstein, Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster, lamenting the loss of Roberto Luongo earlier this week in a game against the New York Islanders. Luongo goes to make a standard sort of kick your pad out kind of save. Boom, down, out of the lineup indefinitely. Certainly looked like it was a groin or, you know, a hip or something lower body that's going to be really disappointing for Roberto Luongo, who's had an absolutely terrific year so far, actually, for the Panthers, coming into that game with a 2.61 goals against average and a 920 save percentage. So real bad news for the Florida Panthers as a losing Roberto Luongo, which means that the pride of Morwena, Manitoba, James Reimer, gets a start tomorrow night in goal for the Panthers as they meet the Winnipeg Jets in Miami. The Jets looking to get back on track. Sort of a down year for the Panthers so far in that they are, you know, certainly not in a playoff position in the Metropolitan Division. It's always weird that they're in the Metropolitan Division, but I suppose that's a separate issue altogether. But they have a dynamic first scoring line that the Jets definitely need to be concerned with as they enter the game tomorrow night as.
Yeah, just going back to Roberto Luongo for a second, you know, not only did they lose him, and you mentioned he's having a good year so far, he's hitting a lot of milestones this year, but they lost the game and, you know, they've been struggling as of late, struggling to score goals, certainly not in that game against the New York Islanders, but, you know, James Reimer, we know that he's played that number one role before for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but certainly a tough blow with Evgeny Dadonov coming over from the Russian League. He's been out the last 3 or so weeks. He was playing on that top line alongside Alexander Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau, basically replacing Jaromir Jagr, who was on that line with Huberdeau and Barkov. Now they've got Nick Bjugstad up there playing the right wing. Vincent Trocheck's actually been a player that's really impressed me this season for the Florida Panthers, and he's a back-to-back 20-goal scorer for this team, but they've been having trouble scoring goals, and they've been having trouble defending as well, and, you know, it's going to be a tough little stretch here for them. And you've got a Winnipeg Jets team coming in to Sunrise, and they want to erase the stench of that loss last night to the Detroit Red Wings. But, you know, I certainly thought that the Florida Panthers would be better this year. But when you look up and down the roster, you know, you see a lot of talent. And, you know, Aaron Ekblad, we know he leads that defense. But, you know, struggling to get secondary goals. And, you know, Radim Verbata was brought in for secondary offense. He just came back from an injury. And, you know, they've brought up guys like Connor Brickley and Dennis Malgin from the American Hockey League. And, you know, right now they're pretty top heavy, as you mentioned, Drew. A lot of those goals coming from Barkov, Bjugstad, and Huberdeau. And then, of course, Vincent Trocheck there on the second line with Jamie McGinn. He's had a good year in his first full year with the Florida Panthers. But yeah, they've dug themselves in a hole right now, and you know, they need to go on a winning streak here in order to get themselves back in the playoff race.
Yeah, the Panthers have given up the fourth most goals in the entire NHL, given up 93 goals so far this year. It accounts for their 10-13-4 record thus far this season.
And it's surprising because, you know, you talked about Roberto Luongo. He's been solid. Luongo and Reimer have kind of split the starts this year. I think Luongo had one more start than Reimer. And then you look at that defense, and you know, that top pair of Aaron Ekblad and Keith Yandel, very solid. I really like Michael Matheson, who's been paired up all year with Mark Pisick. But, you know, it's a younger team, but as you mentioned, they've had tons of trouble keeping the puck out of their own net.
You know, the analytics guys are going to hate me for saying this, but it's a team that still continues to miss Eric Gudmundsson since they traded him to Vancouver. And they did that sort of in the previous regime. We know that Dale Tallon was never a fan of that trade. He was a big fan of Eric Gudmundsson. And, you know, I know that Eric Gudmundsson's numbers aren't good analytics-wise, but it seems like sort of a heart and soul kind of defenseman, you know, a Dale Tallon-esque player is what they're really missing on that back end right now to maybe solidify things defensively, because we know he doesn't do much offensively, but maybe that's part of the problem, is that the defense just doesn't have the necessary defensive mindset. Now, I know people, hopefully they don't yell at me too loud about that, but, you know, I acknowledge the analytics side of that comment at the same time.
Yeah, it's funny. When I was just doing a little bit of reading for our segment on the Panthers game, I wrote, impressive top line, questionable depth on D. So pretty much everything you've queued up, Drew. So thanks for stealing all my points.
Yeah, that's what I'm here to do for there. You know, smart minds think alike is what you're talking about. But it's – sorry, go ahead,
I just wanted to say that, you know, aside from allowing the fourth most goals in the league with 93, their goal differential is a minus 14. So that's tied for third worst in the league. Now, you combine that with a very offensively potent team like the Winnipeg Jets, who are coming off a pretty disappointing loss. You throw in the fact that the starting goaltender is sidelined for the Panthers. You're going to be replacing Roberto Luongo's numbers, which is a 261 goals against and a 928 save percentage, one shutout, with a 367 goals against and an 892 save percentage. So, I mean, you put those all together, that's an equation for trouble for the Panthers.
At the same time, though, the Jets have to be cautious defensively.
Exactly.
To Ezzie, your point, you were talking about Trocheck and Barkov and Huberto. They're very dangerous, you know, top-line offensive talent there. And if the Jets, you know, begin, they certainly don't play together. Huberto, Barkov, and Bjugstad are playing together, and Trocheck is playing with Dennis Malgin and Jamie McGinn for the most part right now. But if the Jets are a little too cavalier on the defensive side of the game, we know that the Panthers, their top line, certainly can get, can put the puck in the net and do so really quickly in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, the Panthers have talented players. I mean, there's no doubt that the Panthers have talented players. I mean, they just haven't been able to put it together. So, I mean, this isn't a bottom five team in the NHL. In my opinion, standings-wise, they might be a bottom three team in the East, bottom five, bottom ten team in the league. But I just think they haven't been able to put it together right now. And they also haven't been getting a lot of offense from their defensemen. And you know, Aaron Ekblad, you know, he didn't have a great year last year. And this year, he struggled at times to produce offensively. And that was kind of what you expected out of Ekblad. We know that he can skate, he can move the puck really well, and you know, Keith Yandle, you'd expect more than 3 goals in 27 games out of him. So you know, right now you don't have a lot of depth scoring, and you know, we talked about it, they've got some injuries, Dadonov and Luongo right now, so they're going to have to run with James Reimer, because Harry Sateri, who they called up from their American League affiliate Springfield, he has no NHL experience. So you got to think that for the next at least week to 2 weeks, they're going to go with Reimer, with Luongo possibly out for in the next month.
Yeah, or exactly, you still don't have a firm timetable on Roberto Luongo, but you're absolutely right, it's going to be James Reimer's show to run with. Panthers also struggling on special teams so far this year, towards the bottom of the NHL in both the penalty and the power play, operating at a 26th in the NHL at 16.66%, and the penalty kill 29th in the NHL at 75%. That sort of, you know, given the prolific nature that the Jets' power play has been so far recently, that's maybe an area that the Jets would look to take advantage of, their great power play versus the Panthers and their struggling penalty kill.
Yeah, I haven't watched the Panthers a lot this year, Drew, so I wouldn't be able to tell you why the power play or the penalty kill has been struggling, but when you talk about the power play, when you're able to put out guys like Barkov, Huberto, and Bjugstad, and you have Aaron Ekblad on that first power play unit, I mean, you would think that the power play would be better, and as far as the penalty kill goes, I think this Panthers defense, guys, is a lot better than they're showing right now. As you mentioned, Drew, I mean, they're bottom five in the NHL in goals allowed. You just wouldn't expect that from the Florida Panthers. So, you know, if the Jets are able to get some power play opportunities, as you mentioned, you know, the power play is up to third overall in the league right now, I believe. So, you know, they should win the special teams battle, but as you know, each game takes on a life of its own, but there aren't many statistics right now where the Panthers as a team are excelling.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, as you mentioned, that you think the Panthers should be better than their record is, and I would agree with you. I mean, you look at, you know, Huberto, Barkov, Bjugstad, and Trocheck, and Dadonov when he was healthy. Well, you have a pretty impressive, you know, top five, top six, you know, forwards right there, and it's not like your depth is completely, you know, on paper, it should be better and putting up more goals than they are. It really is sort of an interesting phenomenon. This is not a year. You haven't had the drama that you had last year in Florida. You have a rookie head coach in Bob Bugner, so he's sort of getting his feet underneath him. But it wouldn't surprise me if the Panthers started to make a bit of a run or started to perform a little bit better, you know, maybe in the second third or the third third of the season, as they get, you know, more comfortable with Bob Bugner and his you know, and his system and how he wants them playing. Because I think there's too much talent on this team to be, you know, fourth worst or third worst in the entire NHL.
Yeah, and they're only 4 points out of the last playoff spot, right?
Yeah, well, the East is pretty lousy.
Right, and, you know, but, I mean, to your point, though, I mean, you go on a run here, and they will have to go on a run here sooner rather than later, right? You can't wait till January or February to make that run. Yeah. So Boston's hanging on to that last playoff spot. Montreal's got that second wild card spot. Pardon me, I should say first wild card spot. So Florida's able to put together 3 or 4 wins here. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can be right back in it, but right now... it's going to be tough for them.
No pressure on James Reimer.
Yeah, okay? Well, I mean, yeah. you got a rookie goalie behind you who has no NHL experience.
Exactly.
And you had a lousy year so far.
And a team with abysmal special teams numbers and allowing goals aplenty.
And you know, Reimer, when they signed him to the big contract that they signed him to a couple years ago, they signed him to sort of be the heir apparent to Roberto Luongo when, you know, Luongo is 38 or 39 years old. It's certainly supposed to be slowing down. But, you know, Reimer, you know, a sub-900 save percentage, goals against average over 3.65. I mean,
also just has a huge rap sheet of injury history. So he goes down.
Well, I mean, if he goes down, then, I mean, we've seen teams that have, you know, Vegas Golden
Knights.
Hello,
Harry.
Yeah.
And, guys, I know the numbers don't look good, but I wouldn't fixate on those numbers too much. First off, they're team numbers, really,
sure.
Especially when you're talking about goals against. And we know what James Reimer did when he was a goaltender with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he has over 250 games of NHL experience. So Reimer's an NHL goalie, in my opinion. Now, we could sit here and argue and say, well, is he a number one goalie,
or is he
a backup goalie? But
right now,
I'm more concerned about who the backup is now, because Harry Sateri has no NHL experience.
Great name, though.
Great name.
You know, they have a lot of work to do here, because as we know, when you're 4 or 5 points out of a playoff spot, even though that doesn't seem like a lot, that's what, 3 or 4 wins.
Yeah.
You know, having said that, you still have to go on an extended winning streak here to get yourselves out of it.
But to their benefit, they are playing in the Atlantic Division, which is clearly the worst of all the divisions in the NHL this season. So they do have that, you know, they have that gleaming light at the end of the tunnel in that they can still keep chasing after their divisional opponents who are struggling. When we come back, Bill Lindsay is going to join us. Bill is the Florida Panthers analyst on their radio broadcasts. He joins us next on NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assore, Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment of the program brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make your teeth ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Bill Lindsay. Bill is a Florida Panthers analyst on their radio broadcasts. Bill, good morning, good evening, pardon me, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. Everything good in Winnipeg?
Everything's great in Winnipeg. How are things in South Florida?
Things are nice. It's a nice evening here.
It's not a nice evening here, so we're glad we're doing the show from inside, let me tell you, rather than outside. It's a slight chill in the air, as you might expect on December the 6th. But
yeah,
the hockey team's hot.
Yeah.
The hockey team's been on fire, so fans are enjoying that. Bill, you know, the Florida Panthers, the Jets' opponent, obviously, tomorrow evening, struggling so far this year, 10-13-4, puts them towards the bottom of the Metropolitan Division, the bottom of the Eastern Conference. The goal scoring's been there. We know that, at least from their top guys. Has it sort of been a problem that they haven't had enough depth scoring so far this season?
You're very accurate with that statement. The top guys are elite. Barkov, to me, is one of the best complete players in the game. Huberdeau is starting to come into his own. Trocheck has been sensational pretty much for the whole season. When Dadonov came in from the KHL for the second stint here, he was able to put up some pretty good numbers. But just not getting a lot from those second third and fourth lines. Bukestad has given you a little bit, but in general, the secondary production just has not been where it's needed to be for this Florida Panther team to have sustained success. They've relied on that top line just too much.
Bill, why have the Panthers been struggling as a team defensively this year?
I think just that, well, the new system, Bugner wanted to push it up, wanted to really try and press the play. The defense wanted to be really active in the own offensive zone, keeping pucks in. And the support wasn't there right away. The forwards getting caught a little bit, the deep pinching when they're not supposed to pinch, giving up 3-on-2s, 2-on-1s with too much regularity. I think they've shorted it up. The last 10, 15 games have been a lot better defensively. The first 10 were not. It was really bad. So they're starting to get there defensively, starting to clean it up. Special teams have still been an issue with this team. Power play, penalty kill, nowhere where it needs to be to have success. But defensively, they're shoring it up. I think that's getting better, and we'll see if the special teams can contribute. If they do, then this Panther team will start to win a little bit more.
Bill, you used the word sensational when you just described Vinny Trocheck. Every time we talk Panthers, his name pops up. He's leading the team in points this year, 27 points, 27 games. I don't know if you can underestimate or how important this guy really is to the Florida Panthers roster.
Him and Barkov are just... I can't tell you how much they mean. Trocheck's one of those guys, runs about 5'11", can't be much more than 180 pounds. But he competes extremely hard. He plays every shift like it's his last shift in the NHL. He's a puck hound. He's gritty. He's willing to go to the traffic areas, block shots, plays all kinds of heavy minutes along with Barkov. But just a true competitor. And he's got a pretty good skill level. But it's his compete level combined with the skill that really does it for Vince and Trocheck. And he's a special player, and he's going to continue to get better. But the 1-2 centerman, as far as Barkov and Trocheck, that is in place down here in South Florida. They got to build around it.
Bill Lindsay is our guest on NHL This Week. Bill is a radio analyst for the Florida Panthers. Bill, you mentioned Nick Bjugstad before. I want to go back to him. He's had the 24-goal season a few years back. Last year, sort of an injury-riddled campaign, was never healthy for a lengthy period of time. It affected his numbers, certainly. You look at him on paper, and he's got such great size, 6'6", 220 pounds. What is Nick Bjugstad's destiny as a player in the NHL? Is he a top six guy? Is he better suited maybe for a third line center role? What's Nick Bjugstad going to be as an NHL player?
Well, his talent's top six. It was there a couple of years ago. You mentioned the injuries last year really set him back. Had some decent games this year, played well, but they're still looking for, Bob Bugner, the coach, just talks about a consistency. He's got to be able to play four out of five good instead of 2 out of 5. He comes around, and when he plays, and he's on his game, he's very effective. Definitely has the ability to be a top six forward. They need him to be a top six forward down here in South Florida. Use the size, 6'6". Sometimes he plays on the perimeter too much. He's got to be willing to go to the net with that size. Abuse defensemen, use that size. When he does, he's extremely effective. The injuries, I think, set him back last year. And hopefully we start to see him turn a little bit of a corner this year. It's gotten better. It just hasn't been consistent enough. So if it improves and he continues to stay healthy and he finds his groove, then that's a big piece of this puzzle that this Panther team needs. But in my opinion, he definitely has the capabilities to be a top six forward.
Bill, this is Panthers defenseman Ian McCaution's first NHL season. He played his first pro year last year with Springfield. How's he done in his first 23 NHL games? I should say he played 3 games last year, but how's he doing in his first full NHL season?
Okay, there's been some tentative times, I think, where he thinks too much. He's got to be more of a reactionary player. And it's common as a defenseman when you're going through in the pace of this league and you get out there positionally-wise, where am I at, what am I doing? When you see him just naturally let his instincts take over, then he has some pretty good hockey games. But you can see sometimes he's out there, gets caught thinking, stops moving his feet. And that's when he tends to struggle. But again, he's another player that when you see him at his best, it's pretty good. He's definitely an NHL defenseman, has the talent to do that. But for him, it's just got to become more of a reactionary sport and more of a trust sport that he belongs up here. I'm not sure if he really feels that he's an NHL defenseman right now, but they're giving him a shot, and he's just got to take it and just have more of a, I guess, a cocky attitude, more of a brazen attitude to prove that he belongs in the NHL.
Bill, we're just looking at some of the numbers here from the Panthers, and their penalty kill is ranked 29th in the league. They're welcoming a team tomorrow that the Winnipeg Jets, their power play has been, like we were talking about earlier, a very important tool for their success as of late. What have you seen from the PK from the Panthers that's kind of led them to where they are in the league right now?
They like to be aggressive, but when you're not on the same page and moving aggressively, and the way that the teams, you mentioned Winnipeg, the way that they can move it around with these top players, and if you're aggressive and you don't have the other one follow suit, then you're going to get caught chasing, and with a puck movement, all of a sudden someone's going to be open. So when you have that aggressive type penalty kill, you got to know when to go. The player has to be bobbling the puck or have their puck back turned and then jump. This Panther team just seems to be a little bit of out of sync when they jump at times, and you know the skill level in this league. You see it there with Winnipeg. When you start to run around and you got those players that can pass it and attack that seam, you're going to get in some trouble. So they've just got to learn to communicate and read and react better as far as a penalty killing group.
Bill Lindsay's our guest on NHL This Week. Bill's a radio analyst for the Florida Panthers. The Jets and the Panthers do battle tomorrow evening here on TSN 1290. Bill, it's rare that a player who's only got one full season under his belt signs an 8-year contract extension, but that's what happened with Michael Matheson. He signs an 8-year, $39 million contract extension in the offseason. You know, one full NHL season under his belt. He obviously played a couple years in the AHL. Why did the Panthers feel the need to sign him to such a big long-term deal, albeit not a huge cap hit, but still a significant investment in the young defenseman?
I think that you just said it, not a significant cap hit, and they believe that he's going to be a player that's going to be above that cap hit in 2-3 years. He's an elite skater. I get a chance to see him every night. He skates as good as anyone. The offensive numbers not quite where they need to be, but definitely has the ability to be a shutdown defenseman just because of his skating ability. It's top-notch, the way that he can turn, use his edge work, and jump up in the play. He needs to be that fourth man on the rush, though. He's got to go be that man, because when he jumps up in the play, he's very effective, and he skates so well that he can get back if he gets caught out of position. But they believe that he has all the tools, and I'm with the Panthers on that one, just watching him play, that he has the tools, and I think it's going to continue to get better. But, you know, in this league, if you can skate, you can play. And that's definitely the case. So he can skate with the best of them. We'll see if he continues to develop and go in the right direction. If he does, then this contract's going to pan out, and I think that's why the Panthers did it.
You know, Bill, just getting away from the current Florida Panthers here for a second, back in 1993, you were a member of that expansion Florida Panthers team and also a member of the team that went to the Stanley Cup Final in 1996. How much have you been watching of this Vegas expansion team, and how impressed have you been with what they've been able to do here in the first third of the season?
Very impressed. We were the best expansion franchise in sports history. I think we might lose that mantle this year. It looks like this week. Vegas is not only going to be a contender, but they have a chance to win that Pacific Division. That's legitimate. Their home record, which you might have figured going into Las Vegas, teams going in there have definitely struggled. I'm not sure if the nightlife or anything's playing into it, but a lot of success, and it shows you the depth of the league. You got 30 what you would call cast-offs that have come in there, and they've got some pretty good talent, and Jared Gallant's done an excellent job with that team. And I don't know many teams in the NHL, let alone an expansion team, that could go through four goalies and still have that kind of success, which is, I mean, that's the most remarkable thing to me, that they've ran through four goaltenders already, and they still don't have their number one back, which really is a testament to how good they are as a team and how well they play as a group. And that's a team that has a lot of players that want to prove something to the rest of the NHL. That's what we wanted in 93. We wanted to prove that we belong, that we were capable. So now guys are getting first-line chances, second-line chances, where maybe they were third- or fourth-line guys, and they're contributing. So it's been a great start for Vegas, and I think they're going to be able to sustain it.
Bill, I'm curious, any idea if there's any disappointment within the Panthers organization that Owen Tippett was left off the Canadian junior selection invitee list? And conversely, is a kind of a bittersweet day with Jonathan Eng, the fourth rounder of 2016, actually getting an invite to the camp?
Yeah, it's nice. And those players, you would have to ask. I'm not sure development-wise that an NHL team is too concerned about the World Juniors. I know it's a great experience. I played in the World Junior Championships, and I loved it, and thought it helped me out a lot. So Jonathan Ang, it's a good chance for him. But Owen Tiepta being left off, maybe it's a number of games. But at the end of the day, if he's successful and comes out and is able to produce for your franchise, it's something that you'll look back on and you just wouldn't even worry about. The Panthers believe that he has the talent to be a scorer in this league. So I would say maybe there's a little bit of disappointment, but as far as World Junior goes, as players, I think it's minimal as far as the development of a player.
Bill, we'll let you go on this last question. We know it's Bob Bugner's rookie year as an NHL head coach. How would you evaluate the job that he's done so far for the Panthers?
He's done a good job. He's fitting in. I think it's a learning curve anytime you're a first-year NHL coach. A lot of experience in a couple championships in the OHL. Went to the Stanley Cup as an assistant coach in San Jose. Gets the chance here. And the guys want to play for him. He relates to the players. That's the biggest thing for me is just getting people to buy in to what you want to do. And the players believe in what they're doing. They haven't executed it, I think, as well as they would like. But Bob Bugner, I definitely think, has the qualities and makings to be a good coach. The players respect him, and they want to play for him. So hopefully this Panther team can turn it around. But Bob Bugner is going to have success in the NHL, I have no doubt.
Bill Lindsay is a Florida Panthers radio analyst. The Jets and the Panthers will do battle tomorrow evening in Sunrise. Bill, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Take care, Bill. Thanks again.
Will there be any rats on the ice, though?
Well, I don't know. It depends if they get some goals. We'll have to see about that. And, of course, any segment about the Florida Panthers has to end with me saying that I have serious concerns about the Florida Panthers scouting department. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Big thanks to Bill Lindsay for joining us to talk about the Panthers. In case you missed any of it or you missed any of the program, it's going to be available for download on iTunes. You can subscribe, get it sent to your Android device each and every week. You know, however you want to get the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, you will be able to get it. I promise you. Just like Pongo, who's giving us a shout out from Halifax, loves listening to us. So thank you, Pongo, for listening to us from Halifax.
Go Mooseheads.
On this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. Exactly. Go Mooseheads. Insider trading. I'm not sure that Halifax is next up to be one of the NHL's expansion destinations, but we know Seattle is. Here's what the guys from Insider Trading had to say about the NHL and its potential for a landing in Seattle.
Let's turn our attention to the NHL. Big news out of Seattle on Monday. City Council voted to put up $600 million to renovate the Key Arena. They say by the end of 2020, it'll be ready to host an NHL team. If that happens, NHL Board of Governors meeting in Florida Thursday and Friday. Topic of conversation there?
Well, that's not actually officially on the agenda that went out Monday. That's because it went out before the City Council vote in Seattle. The Board of Governors will absolutely address the Seattle situation. First of all, do not underestimate how significant that vote was in Seattle. For years, the NHL has been intrigued by this market way before they ever thought of Vegas. But the issue was, of course, the rink. That was no longer an issue. At some point during the Board of Governors meeting, I believe NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, in one form or another, will address Seattle. How that statement takes shape, we shall see. But the bottom line is they're not coming out and awarding a franchise, but they're going to acknowledge the interest in Seattle.
That's right, Pierre. We do not believe that a franchise will be awarded or that even a conditional franchise would be awarded to Seattle. But there is an executive committee meeting before the Board of Governors meeting, and what happens at those two meetings could go a long way in towards of how the NHL does react this weekend. Here are some possibilities for the NHL. Number one, they could acknowledge that there's substantial ownership interest from Seattle, and maybe that even comes in the form of a financial guarantee from the owners in Seattle. Number two, ready to announce that the league is ready to expand to 32 teams. Number three, invite expansion bids. Make this a formal process. Or number four, allow the ownership group in Seattle to do test marketing, whether that's a season ticket drive or whatever else. The National Hockey League could technically do any one of those four things. It could do all of those four things in this next week, or it could do none of them. What happens at the meeting on Thursday and Friday will dictate the public response.
Well, the Seattle group is backed by some real heavy hitters in terms of the landscape of finances. You know, you look at Jerry Bruckheimer. He's been knocking doors, some NHL ownership for the past decade, maybe longer than that. You've got David Bonderman, who's got deep, deep pockets. This guy is a multi-billionaire. And then you've got Tim Leiwicki, who's going to provide considerable influence into the renovation plan of Key Arena. So all of those components, I think, would be attractive not only to the National Hockey League, but clearly to NHL owners.
And while the Board of Governors discusses the situation in Seattle, they may also be talking about the Carolina Hurricanes. Tell us about that.
Yeah, in fact, the executive committee might deal with it on Thursday, and it involves a potential sale of Peter Carmano selling a big chunk of the Carolina Hurricanes to Dallas businessman Tom Dundon. Now, the deal's not done yet, but it's certainly getting close. And part of the deal in terms of what the NHL has communicated to Tom Dundon is that if you buy the team, you're not going to relocate it. It stays in Raleigh. I think everyone is on board with that.
There's a lot going on just in time for the Board of Governors meeting. So they are the insiders, Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun, and Darren Dreger. It is Insider Trading.
The Board of Governors of the NHL meeting later on this week, I believe, in West Palm Beach, Florida, a nice destination in December. Seattle, their arena, should be ready in the next, you know, two, three years, as they make the renovations to the Key Arena. Is this a foregone conclusion? This is franchise 32 for the NHL, Ezzy?
Yeah, or a relocation, right? And it looks like right now Houston and Seattle have bypassed Quebec City as the next city to get an NHL team. When Vegas was awarded their expansion franchise, it looked like Quebec City was going to be next. But we don't know right now if it's going to be an expansion team or a relocation, because the Arizona Coyotes are obviously the big elephant in the room.
Right.
Are the Arizona Coyotes staying in Arizona, right? So I think there's always the possibility that the Coyotes relocate. We knew
I think the Coyotes are going to Houston.
Possibly.
And that'll happen sooner rather than later.
Could happen in 2 years.
I think it'll happen very quickly, because that doesn't seem like they're going to be... They have yet to be able to figure out a way to build an arena in somewhere other than Glendale. And you have a billionaire owner in Houston who owns the arena there now, and he wants an NHL franchise to fill the dates there. So the current owners of the Coyotes, I think, will probably... You know, they'll be glad to sell it. They'll probably make a profit on their investment there.
Well, they're losing a lot of money right now.
Right. So you sell it to the guy in Houston, you tell Tillman Fertitta, you sell it to him, he gets his new shiny new toy in the NHL and play in the Toyota Center in Houston. The Seattle franchise gets an expansion team because they need the few years of a buffer in order to get everything renovated in Seattle, and boom, you have your 32 teams. And then, unfortunately for Quebec City, they're used as a stalking horse for any team that has arena troubles or might want to consider relocating. It doesn't sound like the new owner in Carolina is going to be given that opportunity. It really goes to show you guys just how perfect a storm it had to be for the Jets to come back to Winnipeg.
Yeah, and based on that premise, Drew, that if the Coyotes are going to relocate, it's to Houston, then I agree with you. Then it's a foregone conclusion that Seattle will be the 32nd franchise in the NHL, and Bob McKenzie wrote about that today on TSN.ca, right?
Yeah.
So it looks like Quebec City is not getting a team anytime soon unless there's another team that relocates. And quite frankly, you know, it's just not a big enough market. When you're talking about Houston and the surrounding areas, you're talking about, what, 5-6 million people? Yeah. And when you're talking about Seattle and the surrounding areas, you're talking about, what, 3-4 million people? So the NHL clearly wants to be in those larger American markets.
Yeah.
And we're not saying, by the way, that Quebec City isn't ever going to get an NHL team again, or they don't deserve to get an NHL team, because
they definitely deserve an NHL team.
Also have a brand new arena that's sitting there right now empty.
Well, they have to hope. I mean,
you have the QMJHL there and you have concerts there, but they built that team, Drew, for an NHL team. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Did they not?
Of course they built it for an NHL team. There's no question about it. The problem that they're running into is the NHL doesn't want to grant them an expansion franchise because they'd rather be in Seattle.
Well, also, if you go to Seattle, then you have the 16 teams in the West and the 16 teams in the East, right? If you go to Quebec City as opposed to Seattle, you have 17-15.
Well, if you go to, and we can talk more about realignment or whatever later on when it becomes more of a reality, but it's pretty easy. The Coyotes move from the Pacific Division to the Central Division if they're in Houston, same time zone as you know, Central time zone in Houston. And then whatever the Seattle franchise is fills their spot in the Western in the Pacific Division. Boom, you have your four eight-team divisions, and you're done, nice and easy, straight, just going based on time zones. It's fairly simple. It's fairly straightforward. And unfortunately for Quebec City, until one of the, let's call them the Eastern franchises, runs into serious problems, that's probably going to be when their only opportunity to get an NHL team. They're going to be used as leverage for a lot of other teams as they try and figure out their own arena situations.
Yeah, and you know, no one should be that surprised that, you know, Seattle is being talked about as an expansion team, because Seattle has been on the radar now, Drew, for 3 or 4 years, I would say.
Even longer than that, probably behind the scenes.
So, I mean, this is something that has been in the works. You mentioned the $600 million arena that's been approved this week, and, you know, the ownership group there has done everything the right way, and, you know, it seemed like 3 or 4 years ago that, you know, Vegas getting a team, you know, wasn't really going to happen. It was a pie in the sky idea. Yeah. And some people were saying that about Seattle a couple of years ago. But if you read what Bob McKenzie wrote today, I mean, Seattle could have an arena as early as, what, 3 years from now?
Yeah, 2020.
Yeah, exactly. So 2020, you know, hindsight being 2020, it looks like it's going to be the Seattle and Vegas as your two expansion franchises in the NHL. This segment of the show was brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. When we come back, Adam Kimmelman of NHL.com joins us. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from NHL.com, a good friend of ours, Adam Kimmelman, joins us. Adam, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure. Adam, obviously start with the World Juniors with you, as Canada and a lot of the other nations released their rosters today for their training camps. 32 players invited to Canada's National Junior Team Selection Camp, as the World Juniors are about, 20 days away. Boxing Day, of course, the tournament gets underway for Canada. You know, your impressions about the World Junior Tournament in general as we get closer to that time of the year. Is there a favorite? Is it Canada, you know, the favorite for the World Juniors this year, or do you have a sort of a dark horse team that you like better?
Well, it's really hard to say, you know, one way or the other at this point. You know, all we've seen are the evaluation camps, and still there's still a lot that can happen between now and the start of the tournament. You know, you really got to wait. I think you got to wait and see how the rosters finally shake out. But I think just looking at the preliminary, I think you have to put Canada and the U.S. at the top of the list as far as the favorites. You know, the U.S. is defending gold medalist. You know, Canada got there also, and they're going to have, I believe, 7 guys at their camp who were a part of last year's team. You know, there's a lot of talent on both sides, and I think, you know, it would not be a surprise to see those teams again in a rematch on January 5th.
You know, Adam, I know that you cover a lot of the Canadian prospects for your DraftCast podcast, and a lot of attention here, obviously, has been on Logan Stanley, drafted first round back in 2016. Do you consider Logan Stanley still a long shot on this Canadian decor?
Well, it's hard to say long shot. I think he brings a different element that, you know, a lot of these other guys don't, whereas he's not going to be a real big offensive producer. He's got a heavy shot, but he's a big body. You know, he's the kind of guy that you need on the penalty kill if you're defending a one goal lead. You know, he's a guy who can clear the crease at 6'7" and 200 and something pounds. You know, he's big, he's strong, you know, he plays physical. you know, the skating, you know, is it's going to, he's a bigger guy, so maybe it's a little bit of an issue, but I think he definitely would fill a role on that team. And look, it's an embarrassment of riches when you look at what they have to choose from, you know, but they can, if they, they have enough offensive guys, if they want to spend a spot on a big, strong, defensive-minded guy who they can, you know, maybe specialize on the PK, then Logan Stanley would be a pretty good choice.
Adam, just looking at a bunch of preview articles and just looking up to it, it's always an exciting time. It's such a fun tournament to watch. And a lot of talk about how strong Finland is going to be coming in. And the Jets, you talked about a big body. They've got a draft pick from 2017. Christian Vesalainen, you know, he's leading his Liiga team in points as an 18-year-old. What have you seen from this youngster maybe entering the global stage that is the World Juniors?
Well, I think he was looking to do a little bit more last season. You know, he bounced around from a couple of different teams, didn't really have a good World Junior, but, you know, let's face it, nobody on that Finland team really did last year. And you think, you'd have to think there's a lot there that they want to prove to show that last year was, you know, a real aberration. They fired their coach after three games. They had to survive the relegation round. And a lot of those players are going to be coming back. Vesalainen is one of them. You know, I think what's really going to help him is there's a little bit more stability this season. You know, he's been drafted. He doesn't have to worry about that. He's been with the same team for the entire season so far, so he doesn't have to worry about that. I think last year was, you know, the talent was there in his underage year. Maybe it dipped a bit last season because he maybe at 18 years old gave in to the pressure a little bit, which is pretty human. Anybody would do that. Now all that stuff's behind him. He can just focus on being the player that he's being. And you said it, he's having an excellent season, you know, with his team in Liiga. He's got, you know, an axe to grind from last year with the World Juniors. That whole Finland team does. I think they're going to be a motivated bunch. You know, they played real well in the summer at the World Junior Summer Showcase up in Michigan. If that, you know, summer hockey is what it is, but if that's a precursor of what's to come, that Finland team is going to be hungry. They're going to be angry, and I think they're going to be, they have a chance to be a dangerous team. And Vesalainen is a guy that they're going to really rely on for offense because of the skill, because of the size, because of the ability there.
You're listening to NHL This Week. We're joined by NHL.com's Adam Kibbelman discussing the World Junior Hockey Championships coming up in about 20 days' time, live from Buffalo, New York.
Adam, as you mentioned earlier, Canada and the U.S. have to be considered favorites again this year. They met in the gold medal game last year, of course, and that American decor, obviously a lot of eyes are going to be on Quinn Hughes. He's projected to be a top five pick in the 2018 draft. You've got Ryan Lindgren there, second rounder of the Boston Bruins. Winnipeg Jets second rounder Dylan Samberg, he's off to a pretty good start in his first year of NCAA college hockey. Is it safe to say that he's probably going to play a pretty prominent role on this U.S. team?
You know, I think he had a real good showing for himself at the summer hockey, and he's made, you know, the bumps in the road have come, you know, in NCAA hockey, as they would for any 18-year-old stepping up from, you know, high school hockey to, you know, Minnesota Duluth, which is a pretty good program. You know, the offense, again, much like Logan Stanley, I don't know if he's going to be a big-time offensive producer. He's got a heavy shot, but, you know, I think much like Stanley, he's going to be a defensive-minded guy, big, strong, skates okay. You know, I think Sandberg's going to have every opportunity to make this team, but, you know, like you said, that defensive core is pretty solid. You know, one name that you left off your list there was Adam Fox, the Calgary Flames prospect who goes to Harvard University. You know, he has a shot to maybe be the captain of this team. He had an outstanding, you know, World Junior Summer Showcase in July, and he's had a real good season. You know, obviously there's going to be a lot of expectations on him. He's a returning player from last year's team. But there's going to be a spot available for a penalty-killing, defensive-minded type, and Samberg, I would have to think, is going to be under consideration for that role.
Adam Kibbelman, our guest on NHL This Week. Adam, you know, obviously, who's an omission from your perspective? It doesn't have to be Canada or the U.S. If there's one player that you thought would be named to a selection camp that you know, isn't on a team, we were talking earlier in the program with Bill Lindsay of the Florida Panthers. We made note that Owen Tippett was not named to the selection camp. From your perspective, who's an omission that you're surprised to see?
You know, I kind of thought Oliver Wahlstrom would get a shot for the U.S. team. you know, he's going to be, he possibly could be a top 10 pick in the 2018 draft, had an outstanding summer showcase, has done real well with the U.S. national team this season. You know, he's expected to be a leader and a producer, and he's done that. I thought maybe he would get an invite to this final selection camp, but, you know, it's so hard. It's tough to say, you know, a guy got snubbed or you know, you look down on him because he didn't get invited. Because when you look at the list, it's hard to say who would you take off to put him on. You know, all the guys who got invited, they all, you know, are expected to potentially fill certain roles. And, you know, I guess in Wahlstrom's case or in Tippett's case, you know, the guys that are on there ahead of them, maybe they're doing a little bit better as far as the start of their season. You know, Tippett, I think it's been a little bit of a stop and a start for him because he, you know, spent so much time in the NHL, then he had to, you know, he didn't play a lot of practice time, a lot of game time. Now he's got to kind of get himself back into game shape. You know, maybe it's not quite there yet or in the eyes of Hockey Canada. You know, Brad McEwen, who scouts the teams and makes the camp list, and Dominic Ducharme, who's going to coach the team. Maybe they just didn't see enough in the limited time they've had to see him back in the Ontario League, and that's why he didn't make the invite list. I don't know, but, you know, I think if they could leave somebody like Owen Tippett or, in the U.S.'s case, Oliver Wahlstrom off their list, that means what they have ahead of them is pretty talented, and it's going to be pretty interesting to watch here as we move forward to heading towards, you know, when the rosters are due.
Adam, you also provide extensive coverage on the Philadelphia Flyers, and just looking at the selection for Team Canada, goaltender Carter Hart invited back. He took home a silver in last year's. I'm just curious, from a Flyers organizational standpoint, they must be pretty pleased that A, he got the invite back, and B, that, you know, he's gaining such valuable big-time experience in this ever-important tournament.
Absolutely. You know, I think the Flyers would be very hard-pressed to not be happy with anything Carter Hart has done. You know, he was Western Hockey League Goalie of the Week again for the second straight week. He's got to be in the driver's seat to be the starter for Canada again for the second straight World Juniors. You know, he's a guy that there's a lot of promise there, and he's just, he looks like he is going to be the goalie of the future in Philadelphia. Now, obviously, they're not going to rush him. They're going to wait and take time and properly develop him, but as far as benchmarks go, and you know, I know when the Flyers drafted Ivan Provorov a couple of years ago, they sent him back after they drafted him, and Ron Hextall's message to him was, go out and be the best defenseman in the Western Hockey League, and he did it, and now he's also the best defenseman in the Canadian Hockey League. And I think the message was very similar to Carter Hart when they sent him back. Go back, be the best goaltender in the Western Hockey League again, be the starter for Canada at the World Juniors again. And he's doing all that. He's hitting all the benchmarks that they could possibly want from him in his development, on the ice, off the ice. He's about as calm a kid as you can find. You know, I've had the chance to interview him multiple times, and he's very unflappable. The demeanor is good on the ice. The demeanor is real good off the ice. I think the Philadelphia fans will be very happy when they finally see Carter Hart, whether it's 2 years from now, 3 years from now, you know, whenever it may be, he has the look of being a very good goaltender at the NHL level.
Adam, just a few more questions for you here. First question, how relieved are the Philadelphia Flyers that they snapped that extended losing streak? And how has 2017 second overall pick Nolan Patrick looked since coming back from that injury? Of course, his first game back from that injury was here in Winnipeg.
Well, I think, you know, when you try to assess Patrick, you really have to look at how many games has he played in the last two seasons? I think it's under 50. If you combine what he's played last year with Brandon, what he's played this season with Philadelphia, that's a hard, you know, absence to go through at this stage of the game. He's still kind of working himself back into shape, and he's got to learn the NHL game, the ups and the downs, and the schedule and the travel. You know, it's a lot to deal with. So, you know, I don't want to say you want to give him a mulligan on the entire 82-game season, but I think it's really hard to assess Nolan Patrick based on what we've seen so far, just because he hasn't played enough to really get a feel for the game. I don't, that's just my opinion. I think, you know, he's had spurts before the injury. You know, since he's come back, he's had spurts, he's had moments where he's been creative, where he's been, you know, up in the play, where he's done things that make you go, ooh, there's some talent there. But I don't think it's been there enough. And I think, I don't know if it's going to be there enough for another little while yet. Maybe later in the season, maybe, you know, February, March, when he if he stays healthy and he stays in the lineup consistently, he can get into a groove and you know, build some confidence in the offensive zone and create some more offense than he's done so far. But it's hard to say where he is right now just because he hasn't played enough. I think he just needs time to kind of get used to playing, get used to the NHL level. I think the Flyers drafted him not so much with him being a big contributor to the team in 2017-18. I think they're looking long-term, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, for him to be a real key part of what they do when this, you know, this overflowing prospect pipeline all kind of hits maturity.
Adam, last one for you. Dave Hackstall got a vote of confidence from Ron Hextall. Obviously, the Flyers then snapped their losing streak at home against the Flames. How significant was that vote of confidence from Hextall to Hackstall?
Well, I guess it's always couched in the dreaded vote of confidence.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, knowing Ron Hextall, I don't know, you know, the outside voices really don't affect what he does on a day-to-day basis. You know, when the sky looks like it's falling, he kind of looks and sees the bigger picture and he says, you know what, yes, we're going through a slump right now. You know, he came out after they lost that game against San Jose before the road trip, and he said, yeah, we've lost, you know, 9 or 10 in a row, but I still think we're a playoff team. I still see really good things from our team. And, you know, if you look at it on a game-to-game basis, he's right. There were spurts in all of those games. 4 times they had 2-goal leads and they blew them. You know, 4 or 5 times they lost by 1 goal or an overtime in a shootout. You know, so there were winnable games that were decided by 1 or 2 errors that, you know, if 1 or 2 of those goes the other way, maybe they're 4-6-1 instead of 0-10 or 0-5-5. So, you know, he's very patient guy. He sees, you know, the bigger picture, and he's not going to be reactionary. You combine that with the limb he went out on to hire Hackstall in the first place, I think he's going to get a long leash. Now, if they have another one of these losing streaks, or, you know, the bottom really falls out, maybe it's a different story. But I think, you know, the leash is a little bit longer on Hackstall than maybe the outside people, the media kind of wants to kind of sees.
Adam Kimmelman covers the Philadelphia Flyers and prospects for NHL.com. Adam, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Our pleasure. Thanks again, Adam. When we come back, we'll tell you why an NHL head coach called another team's actions premeditated crap. That's just garbage. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
The Capitals.
Here they go.
The gloves are off.
Thornton.
And Tom Wilson.
Yeah.
Retribution for the Oshie hit.
Whoa.
And Wilson clobbers him with a right cross. Down goes the veteran.
He sure did. And Thornton doesn't often fight Joe early on in his career. He would.
That Joe Thornton-Tom Wilson fight happened, I believe, Monday night as the Sharks and the Capitals played in Washington. The Capitals were victorious over San Jose. Bit of an ugly game there. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Ugly game, which really you wouldn't think there'd be much animosity between the Sharks and the Capitals. That Tom Wilson-Joe Thornton fight was early in the third period, and it was in response to Joe Thornton's hit on TJ Oshie. Here's what that hit sounded like. Sorry, actually, this is Peter DeBoer. Pardon me.
Well, like I said, if someone would have grabbed Joe in the heat of the moment after the play because they thought a liberty was taken, then I've got no problem with that. But to go into the dressing room, think about it, come out in the first shift and do that premeditated crap is, you know, that's just garbage.
Do you like to see Joe answer the bell, or would you like to see him kind of...
Well, I think Joe's a man's man, you know. I think our group appreciates the fact you got a 38-year-old Hall of Famer out there that's, you know, basically forced into that by their coaches and their bench, and, you know, he answers the bell. So, you know, how can you not appreciate that?
That's Sharks head coach Pete DeBoer responding to Joe Thornton dropping the gloves with Tom Wilson after Joe Thornton had hit TJ Oshie earlier in the second period. Period ends, teams go to their dressing room. Wilson challenges Thornton at the start of the third period, and what DeBoer doesn't like is that Wilson typically wouldn't be on the ice at the same time as Thornton. He comes on the ice strictly for the fight and the opportunity to fight with Joe Thornton. Does DeBoer have a point here, Ezzy? And what did you think about the Thornton hit that started this all off?
Yeah, I wasn't watching the game live, so I saw all of the highlights after this game, but I think there's a few things to mention in this game. First of all, the Sharks and the Capitals guys are struggling for their playoff lives. I mean, these are two teams that aren't used to being in this position, especially when you talk about the Capitals, Drew. This is the two-time President's Trophy defending champions, right? Defending President's Trophy champions, I should say. Mm-hmm. So they're not having a good year so far this year, but, you know, you mentioned that the hit by Joe Thornton on TJ Oshie was in the second period. It was late in the second period.
Yeah.
And then the fight, as you mentioned, was early in the third period. So this all happened kind of within a half an hour span, real time. And I think, you know, Pete DeBoer does have a point here because, let's be honest here, coaches don't want their star players fighting, especially a guy in his late 30s like Joe Thornton. Mm-hmm. But Joe Thornton can handle himself. He's always been able to handle himself. But I think it's the way Tom Wilson was sent out against Joe Thornton early there in the third period, that's what Pete DeBoer didn't like. I mean, it was intentional. They sent Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson, by the way, is a good hockey player.
Yeah.
He can do other things aside from fight. He got a big goal last year, if you remember, guys.
Tom Wilson's one of the hardest hitters in the league. I mean, Tom Wilson is...
With his body and his fists.
Yeah, Tom Wilson is tough.
Yes, but if you remember, he got a big goal against the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round of last year's playoffs. So this is a guy who can also do other things. But the point is that Pete DeBoer didn't like that Lane Lambert, Caps assistant coach specifically, sent Tom Wilson out and along, you know, with Barry Trotz. So
the coaches were jawing back and forth at each other.
I can see why he's upset here, guys, but the reality is it was a bit of a high hit. Do I think it was a dirty hit? No, I don't think it was that dirty of a hit. I mean, TJ Oshie ends up leaving the game, but, you know, they wanted retribution. TJ Oshie just signed the 8-year deal in the summer. He's one of the top offensive players for the Capitals, along with Alex Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom. Mm-hmm. So they were upset with it. Now, did they go about it the right way? Well, maybe not, but things happen spontaneously in hockey, and I don't think there's going to be any lasting animosity between these two teams. And the reality is they don't
never
play
each other.
Often,
yeah,
right?
They play each other twice a year, so there won't be, and I don't think they're going to meet in the Stanley Cup Finals this year, so it's unlikely there's going to be anything lingering about it.
What you don't want to see, Drew, is Joe Thornton, we know he's had an injury history as of late. What you don't like to see is Tom Wilson TKO him there.
Yeah, he one punches them down to the ice pretty well there.
Yeah, Joe Thornton skated to the opposite penalty box after that hit.
After the punch.
He got up
after
and
the fight.
Skated to the Washington Capitals penalty box.
Well, he took a solid punch right on the jaw.
And he came out flying. You know, he figured, I got to get the jump on this guy. This guy's obviously a way better fighter than me. Mm-hmm. And then I watched this fight and this hit about four times in prep for this segment, and you just kind of see...
Did you have a problem with the hit?
I did.
You had a problem with Thornton's hit?
I did have a problem with it. I thought it was unnecessary, only because Thornton wasn't part of that play to begin with. Oshie steals the puck off of Thornton while they're in the...
zone.
No, they're in the... Oshie's in the defensive zone, so they are in the Capitals' they're in the Capitals' zone.
Yeah.
Oshie steals the puck off Joe Thornton, skates it up the ice, dumps it into the corner, follows up on the dump-in to finish his check on Logan Couture, the guy back there to play the dump-in, and Couture chips it, takes the hit. Oshie falls after delivering the hit, and Thornton comes out of nowhere and hits him into the boards. It's bad timing because Oshie falls post-hit.
He's vulnerable. He can't really...
But there's no reason Joe Thornton needs to come in and deliver that second hit.
Yeah, he sort of just puts his ass into
him. And we've seen Joe Thornton have a bit of a temper a la Sidney Crosby in the playoffs. Remember that slash debacle?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I assume that, you know, obviously not happy he was stripped of the puck in the offensive zone, gets chased down in the defensive zone, and then the hit ensues. Not a big fan.
And, Sean, Joe Thornton would probably just tell you that he was following up on his hit, but I agree with you. I mean, he didn't. He should have held up a little bit. He should have eased up a little bit. There was no need for him to follow through
the
with
puck
that
wasn't
hit.
There.
And I think it was more so the way Oshie was going into the boards that made it you know, look worse than it really was. So we hope that, you know, Oshie isn't long term, and, you know, Thornton doesn't look like he's going to face any supplemental discipline.
Also, real quick, the broadcaster after that hit said that's another big hit TJ Oshie has taken this game. So maybe some premeditated, you know, some prior actions taking place in the game that weren't shown in that highlight. Who knows? But yeah, TJ Oshie got crunched.
From a tire fire to a playoff spot, the Montreal Canadiens are back into one. Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com joins us next to talk about the Habs. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to watch tomorrow night's game, Bernstein's Deli, big screen TVs, great food and drink special, it's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com, he covers the Montreal Canadiens. He also does some work with our sister station in Montreal, TSN 690. Mark Dumont, welcome back to NHL This Week.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I didn't know you have your own deli. Now I'm jealous. 690 doesn't have their own deli.
Well, you know what? Come to Winnipeg. We'll be pleased to treat you to an Illegal Curve sandwich. You know, it's a beast of a sandwich. I don't know. I mean, I know that Schwartz's is up there, but this is sort of the Winnipeg version of Schwartz's. It's not smoked meat, but it's a damn good sandwich.
I'll take your word for it. Any decent sandwich is a good sandwich in my book.
There you go. At least we can.
I'm definitely going to take up your offer on that.
There we go. I'm glad we could find common ground on this important issue. Mark, the Montreal Canadiens, it's hard to believe given the tumultuous start to the season that they had, but they're now in a playoff spot. They're third in the Atlantic Division. You know, granted, the Atlantic is not the strongest of divisions in the NHL, but does this whole saga surrounding the Canadiens thus far this year give people some extra perspective on when to really press the panic button and when to maybe take a deep breath?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's not just not the strongest division. It's a weak division.
Yeah.
I mean, the Atlantic is a terrible division. If they were right now, if they were in the Central, they'd be 1 point ahead of Colorado, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're taking advantage of a fairly easy strength of schedule. But another way of looking at it is that their luck to start the year, their 3% shooting percentage was never going to last. So this is just them normalizing, you know, this is just getting back to some bounces going their way, a few more goals going their way. Thankfully, they played the Detroit Red Wings twice in a row, and they essentially scored 20% of their goals this year in those two games. But Carey Price is back into shape. So, yeah, I think we were pressing the panic button a little too early, but in a city like Montreal, that's, you know, that's just the way she goes.
You know, Mark, you mentioned Saturday night's game in which the Habs won 10-1. I really enjoyed your article in The Athletic breaking down all 10 goals. Is this exactly what this Habs team needed, a 10-goal outburst? Because, as you know, this team has struggled to score goals all year and dating back to last year as well.
Yeah, well, it was definitely a nice boost to the morale because they scored 10 goals and Max Pacioretty didn't get a single point. So you can look at it that two ways. okay, the captain who's their best goal scorer didn't actually participate in the offense. But then you look at it and you say, hey, their best goal scorer didn't participate in the offense, and they still got 10. Their fourth line came to life. They were getting offense from just, you know, a bevy of different players. So that was a gigantic confidence booster for the Canadiens. And even last night against the St. Louis Blues, who you guys know very well, very strong team, they scored twice in 7 seconds, and the Canadiens still bounced back. So they lost that game. But it was a moral victory because they've always had a hard time with big, tough teams like the St. Louis Blues. And coming off that victory against Detroit, you could tell they were flying high. And even though St. Louis seemed really in control at one point, the Canadiens had so much confidence, and a lot of that stemmed from the big win against Detroit.
Mark, I'm not sure how much of a gambling man you are, but I want to run a situation by you, and I'm just curious as to what your thoughts are. Now, there's so many storylines with Montreal this year, especially right now, but Jordy Benn has 4 goals, and looking around the league, Victor Hedman has 2 goals, Brent Burns has 1 goal, and Dustin Byfuglien has 0 goals. Now, if I approached you at the beginning of the season, let's say I gave you 10-1 odds, that 28 games into the season, Jordy Benn would be outscoring those three combined. Would you take that bet, or would you tell me to take my odds and just shove it?
You know, I'd tell you to take your odds and shove it, even if you'd give me 100-1 on that. And, you know, you can add Eric Karlsson to that list.
Sure, yeah.
And Ben is still tied with all of them combined. So it's been a really big change for Ben has been once the team has been healthy, he hasn't been forced to play on his offside. And he's playing much better now that he's on his normal side. And the other situation that's great for Ben, the Canadiens still don't have a partner for Shea Weber. So Ben is playing on that top pairing, and you know when Shea Weber's on the ice, he's getting covered. So Jordy Benn is getting a lot of open ice, and he's taking advantage of his shot. And it's been a really interesting storyline for the Canadiens because they essentially traded Nathan Beaulieu for peanuts to keep Jordy Benn, to not expose him in the draft. And they got a lot of criticism for that, but it seems to be working out for them. The other thing here is Ben has been very good defensively. So he's not just putting up goals, he's playing, you know, way above his skill set and way above his pay grade.
Mark Dumont is our guest on NHL This Week. We're discussing the Montreal Canadiens back into a playoff spot after their rocky start to the year, albeit as a result of the weak Atlantic Division. Mark, you mentioned that they still don't have a defensive partner for Shea Weber. For a while there, the Victor Mete experiment was going so well. Is it fair to say it's sort of come back down to earth? You know, not unexpected given how young Mete is, of course?
Yeah, I'd say so. He went through a fairly rough streak, but what's happening here is it's not just Claude Julien that's not trusting him. And I get it. You know, he's an old-school coach. He likes his veterans. But even when he was playing with Weber, Weber was over-committing to Mete's side. He was basically didn't trust his defensive partner. So what it looks like now, for all intents and purposes, is that Mete will probably be sent back down right before the World Juniors. And then he'll be loaned to Team Canada. And from there, I'm assuming he's going to finish the season with the London Knights. They don't want to go over that 40-game mark to, you know, to get him 1 year closer to free agency. They already lost a year on his entry-level contract. But he's been playing relatively well, even though he's gotten a demotion. He's just such a fantastic skater. He can move the puck up the ice so well, and he does very good under pressure. So he's kind of in that catch-22 situation. He's not quite NHL-ready, but he's probably too good for the OHL. What we're going to see, though, is, you know, he's going to go to the World Juniors. They're going to make a decision, and odds are he's going to be back in London as their number one defenseman there. And he's just, you know, he doesn't have anything left to learn in the OHL. That's the unfortunate part.
Mark, you had a really another interesting article in the Montreal Gazette today writing about Daniel Carr. He's got 5 points since he was recalled from Laval, and the expectation is once the Habs get completely healthy, he might be sent back down to the American Hockey League. But
yeah.
Is he making it really hard for the Montreal Canadiens to send him back?
You would hope so, right? This is a guy that coaches should love. He drives the net constantly. He's very similar to Brendan Gallagher in the sense that he wins a lot of his puck battles, even though he's undersized. He drives goalies absolutely crazy because he constantly drives the net. And, you know, at 26 years old, it's kind of one of those situations where you have to figure out what you're going to do with him. He's due for another contract. I spoke to him earlier this year, and he gave me the impression that, you know, he's happy that he's with the Canadiens, but if things don't progress, he might be looking for a different team once his contract expires next summer. So he has been the reason the fourth line has started scoring. And until he joined the team 3 games ago, the fourth line of the Montreal Canadiens had scored 0 goals this year. So ever since he's been there, the fourth line is no longer a liability. And that's just such a huge asset for a coach. The issue is they're really a big fan of Nicolas Delarrier. So he's also on the fourth line, doesn't have as much talent, but he hits a lot. And Claude Julien wants his fourth line to be a gritty fourth line. So when it comes down to it, and there's also the French factor we can never deny, he might be sacrificed in, you know, in favor of a guy that's a little less talented, that hits a little more. But so far, so good for Daniel Carr. He's doing absolutely everything he can to stay up with his team. And he deserves his chance.
Mark, checking out the Canadian schedule, they got a few more games at home, and then they hit the road for a almost 2.5 week road trip where they play 7 games. For a team that's, you know, clawing and fighting their way back into contention, how important is this road trip to set up the second half of the season for the Habs?
Yeah, well, and you're hitting on something that's pretty important there, because the Canadians have had just essentially a run of their last 15 games, about 12 of them have been at home. So that's going to be important. But what I look at, it's not necessarily that run that's very important. In January, they play Boston 3 times in 5 games. And Boston's the team they're fighting with to get into that, you know, the weak spot in the Atlantic Division. So that stretch will be essentially, to me, that'll be the season-defining moment. If they can take 2, possibly 3 of those wins, they'll be in really good shape. But, you know, as everyone knows, it's always harder on the road. This will be a team that's fully healthy, and they have no more excuses. So Carey Price is going to have to be up to snuff. Max Pacioretty is going to have to score. Alex Galchenyuk is going to have to get back to producing. And they're going to essentially need their best players to be their best players in a situation where they can't match the line. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I'm looking past that road trip, because I'm guessing they'll go above 500, and those 3 games against Boston will be season-defining.
Mark, we'll let you go on this last question. I don't know if you saw Jordan Eberle's comments about the Edmonton media last week, where he talked about sort of the how it wears on him and the drama that the Oilers were undergoing when he was there, you know, with all the high draft picks and the constant struggles. And it sort of rang a little bit deaf to me, in the sense that you look at a city like Edmonton and you look at a place like Montreal, where I would say that some of the media coverage, particularly Alex Galchenyuk, you know, some of the things about Carey Price and maybe even his wife, are beyond the pale of accepted hockey conversation.
Yes, it's disgusting.
Yes. You know, so, yeah, it's just a comment from you sort of about the difference, say, between Edmonton and Montreal, and then how players can handle the unfair and disgusting commentary that you get sometimes in Montreal.
I think you essentially, you know, you got to be like a duck's feather here. It's got to basically just glide right off your back. What we have in Quebec, it's something called Radio Poubelle on the French side. So basically, literally, trash radio. And that's where you're getting all these stupid, stupid comments about Carey Price's wife, Alex Galchenyuk's personal life. And players have learned to completely tune that out. These aren't radio stations that send players to the game or send journalists to the games. They're not journalists. They're shock DJs. And it's something, it's an unfortunate reality in Montreal. But if you're here long enough, you learn to ignore it, because there's too much noise. If you focus on that, you know, you're going to essentially drive yourself crazy. But I do laugh when I see Edmonton players say, oh, you know, life is rough in Edmonton. And I think, hey, look at Toronto, look at Montreal. They don't just criticize you, they invent things outright. And unfortunately, it's something they have to deal with in Montreal, but there's such a long history of it that players know better than to focus on what we call trash radio.
Is there any thought that, you know, one of the I guess, key broadcasters in this trash radio is a former head coach in Mario Tremblay. Is there any thought that he should be above the fray, given that he was the guy who drove Patrick Roy out of town?
Yeah, well, he's essentially become public enemy number one in Montreal. That's the interesting thing here, is that the fans, the population, they're fairly quick to rally around their players because they're so frustrated with these kind of actions. And especially a guy like Mario Tremblay, he had no goodwill to begin with. But I'm used to it, but it doesn't shock me when I hear it. I'm disappointed, because there's so much going on that you don't need to invent that, those stupid storylines. But if you look at Montreal, even websites, there's about four or five that concentrate on their personal lives, essentially TMZs for Montreal Canadiens players. And you know, they rank players' girlfriends. They talk about, possible rehab stints, stuff like that. It's unfortunate. But that's the reality of this gigantic, obsessed market.
Mark Dumont covers the Montreal Canadiens for TheAthletic.com and our sister station in Montreal, TSN 690. Mark, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks a lot for having me on, guys. Have a great night.
You too, Mark. Take care. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL, the out-of-town scoreboard, talk about the Flyers ending their 10-game losing streak. You're listening to NHL This Week, one final segment to come on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One final segment on this Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. It's brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. This week at Rumors, Elliot Chang is in town. Very few tickets available, is my understanding. Get them now at RumorsComedyClub.com. And of course, if you're looking for something to do on New Year's Eve, which is only 25 days away, I assume you guys have big party plans ahead of you, RumorsComedyClub.com is where I'd recommend you ring in the new year. Two shows, tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com. Quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard on this Wednesday evening. In Toronto, the Flames and the Maple Leafs doing battle. The Flames with a 1-0 lead halfway through the second period. Mark Giordano on the power play with his fourth of the year has the Flames up 1-0 on the Maple Leafs. Quality troll job done by the Maple Leafs in the pregame ceremony honoring the Argonauts. And just coincidentally doing so while the Flames are in town, after the Argonauts, of course, beat the Stampeders in the Grey Cup.
It's harsh.
Yeah, it's a little harsh, but funny nonetheless. Yeah. In Washington, the Capitals up 3-1 over the struggling Chicago Blackhawks. Anton Forsberg got the pull in net after giving up three goals in the first period. J.F. Berube in net for the Blackhawks to start the second period. Washington up 3-1 on Chicago. Two games still to come this evening. The Flyers at the Oilers. Those two teams struggling. One of them is going to have to get a victory tonight. And in Anaheim, the Ottawa Senators against the Anaheim Ducks. The Senators looking to bounce back from their defeat at the hands of the Winnipeg Jets on Sunday evening. Jets in action tomorrow evening in Miami against the Florida Panthers. You can hear that game live on TSN 1290. Puck drop, of course, 6:30 p.m. That's it for this Wednesday here on the NHL This Week. Big thank you to our guest, Bill Lindsay, Florida Panthers radio analyst. We were joined by Adam Kimmelman of NHL.com and Mark Dumont of The Athletic. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download. You can subscribe to the show, get it sent to your device each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.